This is the Parental Alienation Speaks podcast. I'm Cheryl Mefford. Parental alienation is an emotional tug of war where one parent manipulates the child's perception, pushing them to reject the other parent. It's a heartbreaking dynamic, and understanding its patterns can help us better recognize, intervene, and support the children affected. It's assumed that parental alienation only happens in divorce situations, but that isn't always the case. Alienation can occur within intact families, where both parents are still living together. Today, we'll take an in-depth look into three patterns that were identified in a study of 40 adults that were alienated as children. We will look at intact and non-intact families. Pattern number one, a narcissistic mother in a divorced family. This pattern was reported by 14 of the 40 participants in the study. A narcissistic mother alienated her children from the father after divorce. The main clinical characteristics of narcissistic personality are grandiosity, extreme self-involvement, and lack of interest in and empathy for others. These mothers were described as self-centered and manipulative. One participant of the study stated, "She really did see herself as the center of the universe." Another said, "She was the center and everything revolved around her." Despite the fact that they were completely consumed with themselves, they were still able to instill a sense of awe and admiration. One participant stated, "I was in my mom's world, not my own. And we were really good friends. It was brilliant. I used to be called her shadow because we'd do everything together." These narcissistic mothers cultivated an emotionally enmeshed relationship with the participants when they were young children, and it appeared to serve their own need for love and admiration rather than to promote the emotional health and growth of the participants. This maternal narcissism appeared to fuel the alienation in at least three ways. Number one, despite the powerful personality presented to the world, narcissists tend to feel empty inside and easily become enraged at the first sign of humiliation or abandonment. Therefore, it's quite likely that the end of the marriage triggered in these women feelings of shame and rage that became directed towards the husband. Participants recalled a steady stream of bad-mouthing about the father following the divorce. The fathers were referred to as cheaters, gamblers, rapists, alcoholics, and abusers in front of the participants. One participant recalled, "She never said anything good about him. She said he was worthless. He was an alcoholic." Another stated, "She said all these terrible things about him my whole life." It's as if the mothers were saying, "If you don't want me, you can't have the children." Number two, the second underlying motivation appears to be anger towards the children that they wanted to have a relationship with the father even though he had rejected the mother. This might have triggered a feeling of abandonment and rejection in the mothers that was too much to bear. They seemed to feel that because they were hurt and angry with the father, the children should be as well. Number three, the narcissistic mothers might have felt especially alone and fragile following the divorce and might have relied more on the children for comfort, companionship, and reassurance than before. One participant stated, "She would ask us where we'd been, and she would say, 'Oh, I was left on my own, and nobody really thinks of me.'" Many narcissists do not know how to be alone, as they need an audience to make them feel real and to reassure them of their grandiosity. In these situations, the mothers created a loyalty conflict and forced the child to choose between the two parents. One participant stated, "We were made to choose. My mother would say, 'To go over there is to go to people who don't like me. I'm your mother. Don't you want to like me?'" In having the child choose them over the father, their emotional needs for revenge, comfort, and reassurance were satisfied. As one participant stated, she impressed upon me that my real ties were with her. These mothers created a cultivation of dependency versus a threat of rejection environment. Typical of narcissists, the closeness these mothers cultivated with their children was sustained only as long as the participants were gratifying their needs. The moment the mothers felt wounded or were displeased, the children were devalued and emotionally cut off. Withdrawal of love and rejection was particularly noticeable following visitation with the father. One participant states, "It would make her angry if I was close with him." Another stated, "She would shut me out. It would be just silence." Another one said, "When I did see him, she was horrible to me. When I came back from visits, she wouldn't talk to me." Another participant stated, "It was very cold. She would give me the cold shoulder." Further, the participants saw firsthand what happened when someone crossed their mothers, having witnessed the rage directed toward the father. To avoid a similar fate, the participants placed the mothers first in their emotional lives because they were never sure of where they stood, and because they believed that they needed their mother's approval for their very survival, they would have done almost anything to please them, including rejecting the father. Participants also felt that their mothers appeared to them as fragile and in need of their loyalty and emotional support. They believed that not only were they needed by their mothers, but that they somehow owed it to their mothers to take care of them. One participant stated, "I didn't bring any friends home. I felt like I was supposed to be there for my mom all the time. I felt like if I associated with anyone other than her, I was betraying her." And it was this longing for the mother's love that was the force that drove the alienation of the father. In this pattern, the narcissistic mothers were able to cultivate an unhealthy reliance on their acceptance and approval, much the way cult leaders encourage people to become dependent on them. Pattern number 2, a narcissistic mother in a non-divorced family. This pattern was reported by 8 of the participants out of the 40 in the study, and is a variation of pattern number 1. As with pattern number 1, the mother was the alienating parent and the father was the target of the alienation. Also, like pattern 1, the distinguishing feature of these families is that the alienating mothers appeared, based on the descriptions provided by the participants, to have a narcissistic personality. The primary difference is that in pattern 2, the alienation did not occur within the context of post-divorce custodial conflict. That is, in all 8 cases, the parents remained married and living together for the participants' entire childhood. The primary technique entailed confiding in the child about the inadequacies and failings of the father. The alienating parents drew the participants into their confidence in such a way as to solidify their relationship at the expense of the relationship with the targeted parent. The participants knew things about the targeted parent that the targeted parent did not know the participants knew, and therefore had no idea that it would be helpful to correct the impression or tell the other side of the story. The participants were left with a biased understanding of the adult relationship, which was designed to make the targeted parent look bad in their eyes. In addition, these confidences served to enhance the intimacy between the alienating parent and the participants and further bind them to that parent. These confidences often led the participants to feel sorry for the alienating parent and anger towards the targeted parent for being so hurtful. One participant said, "She made several announcements to me that she was going to be seeking a divorce, and she told me how marvelous life would be once the divorce went through. I was so happy about that. I suppose I felt as though she saw me as a friend, and I hoped I was worthy of her liking me." Another said, "She felt insecure regarding other women, and I had knowledge of so many things, and that was something I was really too young to know about. My mother would get into more of her personal life with my father, which was really not any of our business as children, and in some way it had a negative effect. One young man recalled that when he was 5 years old, his mother told him she couldn't cope with the demands of raising the family, and she was considering taking him and running away. She was upset, and she was sharing with me. The predominant impression was incredible intensity and excitement and horror, much of which was shared with the participants about the father was designed to make them feel anger or resentment toward him and protective of the mother, furthering the alienation. The alienating mother was able, through the force of her narcissistic personality, to cultivate an emotional alliance at the expense of the child's relationship with the father, despite the fact that the father was living in the same household. In all cases, the mother confided in the participant about her disconnect with the father and drew the child into her perspective that the father was inadequate and in fact responsible for whatever ailed the mother or went wrong in the family. The following description by one participant captured this dynamic. She'd always made both my brother and me feel that our father was somehow to blame for everything. Every day there'd be some attempt by her, some tale she'd tell me, to turn me against my father. So many incidents, it's simply impossible to list them all. Just about all aspects of the alienation worked, as far as I recall. I became my mother's puppet, her ally against my father. I grew to detest him with a truly visceral hate. I couldn't stand to be in the same room with him, or to even talk to him or have him talk to me. Because the alienation did not occur in the context of a divorce, the motivation was probably somewhat different than for Pattern 1 mothers, who most likely felt abandoned and rejected. In Pattern 2, the underlying motivation appeared to have been different, although it's possible that even in the marriage, the mother felt rejected or frustrated by the father and retaliated through the alliance with the child. It's also possible that the mother was not able to maintain an adult relationship in which emotional honesty and compromise was necessary. Perhaps these mothers turned to their children because having the unquestioning adoration of a child was more satisfying and less demanding than a mature relationship with another adult. What links Pattern 1 and 2 is that the child had a close emotional bond with a mother, which the mother exploited to her advantage to meet her own needs. The child chose the mother over the father when forced to choose in order to preserve the perceived closeness with the mother. Pattern number 3, a cold, rejecting, or abusive alienating parent. This pattern was described by 16 of the 40 participants in the study. 3 of those were in intact families, and 13 were in divorced families. The third pattern represents a dramatic departure from the first two. The most striking difference is the tone and quality of the relationship with the alienating parent. Rather than a fabulously close or excellent relationship, as the participants in Pattern 1 and 2 described, the participants in Pattern 3 families were physically, verbally, and/or sexually abused by the alienating parent. In half of the families, the alienating parent was an alcoholic in addition to being physically, emotionally, and sexually and/or verbally abusive. And in 5 cases, the father was the alienating parent. The alienation occurred not through winning the child through charm and persuasion, but rather through a campaign of fear, pain, and denigration of the targeted parent. As one participant explained, "My father was a very strong patriarch. He ran the place. He was a nasty person when he drank, and he drank most of the time, and he pretty much ruled the roost, as the saying goes. When he spoke, everyone else had to shut up and listen, and he ruled with occasional unexpected violence. Mother was cowed. There was very little she could do. She had her hands full dealing with him. He would belittle her. He had a whole bag of tricks to control, and one was the constant belittling of people, of me, and of my sister, mocking and belittling my mother. And it was very effective because there was no escaping it. You couldn't talk back or you would be physically admonished, or you would be mocked even stronger. I was never close to my mother. I didn't want to spend any time with her because I bought into some of his stuff that she was silly and mawkish or overly sentimental and unreliable, or whatever the sum total of the impressions that he tried to convey about her. Another participant told of aligning himself with his brutal and domineering father against his mother and siblings. He ended up getting joint custody, and I was supposed to be in my father's house 4 days of each week and with my mother the other 3 days. I believed that everyone else was wrong and that my father was right, and that he was the one that actually cared about me, and everyone else just wanted to do me harm. I was probably going to my mother's for a while, but my father had pretty much a system set up, and basically what he would do was kind of manipulate everything where I didn't want to be there, since I would rather be with him because of what he had told me and how he made it seem like everyone was bad, so he basically would tell me how to act and behave while I was there and be mean to them. And I was very verbally and physically abusive to my other family members at the direction of my father, because I was blaming them for me not being with him. Eventually, this participant cut off all contact with his mother for several years. One way to understand why the participants in these pattern 3 families align themselves with their violent parents is within the framework of identification with the aggressor. According to Freud, identification with the aggressor is a psychological defense mechanism whereby individuals cope with the anxiety associated with feeling and/or being powerless by taking on the characteristics of the more powerful person, even if that person is aggressive and/or abusive towards them. In this way, the child feels less overwhelmed and out of control. This defense mechanism has been used to describe why children defend their abusive parents, as well as why individuals who feel anxious and alone may join a cult and form an identification with its leader. In the context of Pattern 3 families, the alienating parent was experienced as so powerful that the child felt safer aligning with him or her than with a rejected, targeted parent. In this way, the goal of the alienation from the child's perspective was avoidance of pain and powerlessness, rather than the maintenance of a close emotional bond with the alienating narcissistic mother, as in patterns 1 and 2. Parental alienation can take many different forms. The underlying motivation may be different, the strategies the alienator uses may differ, and the motivations of the child for siding with the alienating parent may also vary. 3 distinct patterns emerged in the sample of 40 cases. But it's possible that additional patterns would have emerged with a larger sample. 5 notable findings emerged from an examination of these 40 cases. The first is that alcoholism, maltreatment, and personality disorders co-occurred in most of the cases included in this study. The second finding is that parental alienation can occur in intact families. The third finding showed that alienation occurred in some of these families that were not involved in post-divorce litigation. Fourth, the parents who were the target of the alienation appeared to play a role in their own alienation. In some cases, these parents were passive and uninvolved, even when living in the same household, and did not work particularly diligently to establish and/or maintain a positive and meaningful relationship with their own children. Many did not write letters or make phone calls to their children during periods of non-visitation. They did not attend school events and sporting competitions. They did not follow through on planned visitations, and in some respects appeared to be casual about their relationships with their children. The final finding that emerged is that the alienation was not always completely internalized. Despite the protest of hate toward the target parent, many of the participants reported holding on to good feelings about that parent somewhere deep inside them. If you found this information helpful, please like and subscribe to my channel and go to parentalalienationspeaks.com to learn more about our story. I'm Cheryl Mefford, and I'm fighting for childhoods.